The artist Peter Trevelyan is about to open an installation in Christchurch, exploring the possibilities of unfamiliar artefacts and perceptual technologies. The incompleteness theorem promises to distract and disorientate in the service of a feedback system of mirrors, lights, and other unconsciously provoked triggers within the structure and space of the physics room. Peter Trevelyan recently graduated from Massey University with a Master's in Fine Arts. He's currently working at the university as a creative studio tutor. I'll speak with him in a few moments, but first, as Virgo Bali previewed earlier, Webern's analytical insights into Bach's Ricercata from A Musical Offering. The incompleteness theorem. Peter Trevelyan, what does that mean?
It's a famous and quirky piece of maths that I discovered doing my... I looked into it in more depth and actually learned something about it rather than just talking about it while I was doing my Master's. And it's a really kind of famous moment in maths history that I don't understand any depth, and I'm paraphrasing other people here, but this Austrian philosopher and mathematician Kurt Gödel was working on the sort of ultimate mathematic language that accounted that, like, a language and an algebra that could explain maths using its own rules. And this had been a quest in maths for hundreds of years, and famous people like Bertrand Russell and George Boole had all been working towards this. And after constructing this really elaborate and beautiful system, all based on factoring prime numbers, he turned around and wrote it all off in a couple of sentences and just actually proved that it was impossible through something that actually looks just like a quirky little wordplay.
I quite like your use of the word quirky in relating a mathematical concept. How is it? What makes it quirky?
It's kind of quirky because it's... I can't quote it for you word for word, but it's actually just a sentence, and it basically says that nothing can explain itself within itself. And it's put more eloquently than that. But after this, and he wrote, massive tomes of this really dense mathematics, and then it was just a couple of sentences, and he pretty much solved the problem forever and just said, it can't be done.
But he actually published his findings?
Yeah, yep.
And yep. then I guess the post-disclaimer.
Yeah, I mean, for people who would understand it, the book has an awful lot of proof of why it won't work anymore, and it actually turned out to be quite a key work in the sort of developing of the binary codes for computers, because once he proved that, then they immediately came up with a way around it and worked past it. But, it was really bizarre that it was just... And it almost... I'm sure there are the mathematical proofs, but it almost just seems like it was some kind of smart-aleck remark that he made and went, no, you can't do that. And that was it.
Yeah. Well, the incompleteness theorem, how did that end up inspiring you in the exhibition that's on at the physics room at the moment?
They're not really, I can't claim that I'm trying to express something about the idea. And it's more like, it was more just a fascination with that, these sort of complex logical systems that are built on often very shaky and dodgy foundations. And this whole thing of, like, you can argue, and without being an expert, perhaps not very successfully, but that the incompleteness theorem proves that, like, an electronic artificial intelligence is impossible, and yet they still build and are working towards these things. And, all the sciences are so built on observation that, and the eye is so fallible, and the brain that processes what the eye sees is so fallible and subject to delusions and things. And then all of that, all of our physical sciences have been built on ultimately that foundation of what we sense. And, I like the huge thing built on the shaky foundation, a lot like Wellington.
There's also an idea within there, I think, that we will proceed in the face of a weight of evidence against us.
Yeah. It's almost like the idea gains currency and it becomes essential to us, like... something else I became very interested in the course of my Master's was the linear perspective system, which, I taught high school for a couple of years and we're still teaching it. And this thing's, claimed to be invented by Brunelleschi back at the start of the Renaissance. And it's used everywhere for teaching people how to draw stuff so it looks like the real world. And it's not actually accurate. Like, it's built around a square when the eye is actually a sphere, and it's only half the system. And it's not even true. It's got embedded in our brains, and the camera came along and kind of vindicated it, despite it being actually not true because it uses the same square format. And I was just dumbfounded. I've been teaching kids the falsity.
And how did that make you feel?
It didn't really trouble me too much. It wasn't the only falsehood I purveyed during that time.
Now, how are these ideas expressed in the exhibition, though?
Well, yeah, I mean, the incompleteness theorem is more of a quirky, catchy title that I liked. And it is there as as an inspiration. But really what I'm trying to make are structures and forms that are difficult to actually perceive. And the dimensions kind of get blurred up a bit. And things that, you know, you can see them and you can tell them that they're there, but the actual structure and the form of them is kind of confusing and sets you back a little bit as you're trying to make out what it actually is and where it sits. And yeah,
so, sort of visual trickery, illusions?
Lots of, I mean, the bigger work is all mirrors, sort of an object made entirely of mirrors and spiky facets coming off, and the mirrors bounce off each other and then the walls bounce off it, and especially because most art galleries are all white and you kind of, there's a, the real definition of the form can be kind of lost, and you can look at one thing and think you're seeing something sticking out and it's actually a reflection of something on the other side, and hopefully it's quite disorienting and a bit sinister too, maybe. Yeah.
Is this a good time to bring in the mysterious object that that is sitting before me in a shoebox? I haven't seen it yet.
These are a couple of the real little sort of, these are just, I mean, I think of them as models and 3D drawings, really.
So sort of a wireframe lattice work?
Yeah, they're actually they're made from those mechanical pencil leads, like the 0.5 millimetre graphite. Gosh, from a clutch pencil.
The ones that I'm always breaking when I exert too much pressure.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
I don't want to touch this. It looks very delicate. It's about the size of a large grapefruit, maybe. So go on with your description.
And it was they're a lot more about... I wanted to draw like a system actually evolving and moving, and I couldn't find a way to do it that I was happy with in 2D. And then I kind of had the idea, which doesn't seem that groundbreaking now, but it was quite a shock at the time, that I could make it out of pencil leads. So it's been ages trying to find the right way of joining them together, and kind of built it into 3D. And what I really liked about it was the way, because it's such a thin line and it's still almost drawn, that you look at it and it kind of keeps lapsing back into 2D, like it could just be a drawing, and every angle you look at it from, it's still quite hard to read the whole thing as a whole because it's made up of such fine little lines.
Yeah, I suppose the outer limits of the form are quite difficult to picture where they are, because you can see right through it. Yet I would have no idea what, if I look at from it from any angle, what the reverse, what if it's pointing in or pointing out. Are those the kind of ideas that you're having to explore?
A disorientation of form, or a confusion of form, maybe. Yeah.
But your exhibition isn't giant sculptures of pencil leads.
No.
So this was a beginning for you.
Yeah, there'll be some of these little ones scattered around the site as well. And the exhibition will be sort of a main big... The actual shapes and forms are quite similar to that, but in mirror. And mirror kind of does the same thing, because it's almost like a non-material. And where you look, it's just not there. And you see the lines where it joins and stuff. And there's actually, despite being, you know, hugely different in construction, I think there's quite a few parallels between the two, except for scale.
What kind of explorations into the realms of perception have triggered interests in you that have found a route through to this, say, exhibition?
A lot of it came from just thinking about, like, electronic media and how especially the idea of the screen being a window, the window being a painting frame, and that whole idea of there's another space and another depth in that screen that we look into and communicate with. And what really kind of fascinated me about it was I sort of thought of these electronic technologies as the first kind of tools and machines that we'd made that you couldn't just look at and get a kind of instinctive understanding. Like the Industrial Revolution, you could look at a giant piston and go, well, it's just a big kind of machine arm or a big machine leg, and you could relate it back to the human body.
Mm-hmm.
which ultimately all sculpture is about, the human body relating to spaces and things we make. And then, suddenly these screens and, even, I guess, radio is a fairly good early example of a technology that you can't kind of see working and understand visually.
It's you at home, can't see what's going on here.
Yeah.
It's just a couple of guys sitting on chairs in a room, really, though, isn't it?
yeah, but you can't see radio working. You can see the little waves there.
Oh, yeah, on the screen. So it does have some sort of physical representation by other means.
Yeah, although that's entirely abstract, and it's just a way of presenting it to our senses that we can make sense of.
In your exhibition, you've got triggers. What do they trigger, and how are they triggered?
There's been, in the larger work, because I'm really interested in how we interact with these weird, distorted spaces and things, I've used a lot of recycled keys from computer keys and those cheap motion sensors that you see everywhere, and I use them to either it's a what I'm really into is that the advanced monkey doing stuff with its machine and its machine's doing stuff back to it, so I like
advanced monkey would be us.
Sorry, that might be a bit controversial, but it's still that that tool making ape type thing. And I like to have spaces where the motion sensors, as the audience moves around, is doing things and even kind of encoding actions or movements into some type of form where, I'd really like to capture that thing where you're sort of like looking at a page of a foreign language and you know there's content and there's meaning in there and you can almost see patterns starting to form, but it's still alien to you and you can't really drag the sense out of it. I'd like that idea that for the audience to get that there is something going on and there's a pattern and there is an order and a purpose, but they're not privy to it. It's been taken out of your hands, and so you're interacting with a machine that you know what to do because it switches and stuff, but you don't know, you don't understand really why you're doing or what's happening with your input.
But you can't do anything, presumably, you can't do anything as dramatic as changing the geometry or the shape of the objects that you've set up, or can you?
I am working on making a moving thing of mirror, but that's fairly ambitious at these days, this stage, and we kind of the thing you need other people's monies and perhaps a few engineers to help with. It's a bit ambitious. But you can control, you can do an awful lot controlling the lighting. Space, dark or light, noise in the space, just, subtle things. A lot of it came from just being at Massey University for the year, and there's an awful lot of, retrofitted automatic doors and things, and it's absolutely surreal to be walking through the corridor and some of the doors open automatically for you even when, you're not going that way, and then some of the doors haven't had the sensors retrofitted and you just end up standing there going, what's wrong with the door? And and that real kind of clunky use of the technology, and it's well-meaning, but it's just, I think it misses a lot.
Now, you mentioned before that there could be something slightly sinister about the look in the room. How do you hope that the audiences will react when they go through?
It's a giant sort of spiky thing made of mirrors in a space where the lights are turning on and off and it can be quite dark, so there is a small element of a physical unpleasantness, and there is a sort of a slight drawing in of breath, seeing a whole lot of jagged mirrors composed into an object that it's kind of hard to see the limits of. So I'm not trying to, I definitely don't want to hurt or scare people, but I do like that little bit of edge of a slight discomfort.
And how has the room worked to your advantage, the physics room?
It's more because I'm going to take over things like the lights and sort of colonise it and, turn it into a more obvious machine than, a building is a machine, but actually kind of make that more explicit.
I like that these ideas are coming to fruition, these ideas of perception and mathematics. I like the way they're coming to fruition in something called the physics room.
Yeah, almost like a kind of weird government bureau for quasi-scientific research. But
which is not what you're engaging in at all.
Well, the science is definitely quasi, but no, not at all. But I mean, a really nice quote, and I can't even remember who it's attributed to now, is that the history of art is just the history of perception, and you know, art is a sort of expanding front of everything that we can perceive, and I think there's an awful lot to that. And you know, ultimately everything's physics, I guess. That's what the physicists tell us. The particle accelerator hasn't destroyed the world yet, but still plenty of time.